Well, let's take a look at imagined catastrophe. When we fantasize, it is inevitable that we will experience the polar opposite, imagined catastrophe. When life shows up differently from our fantasy, and it always does, we can engage in obsessive worrying, endlessly thinking about every worst-case scenario known to mankind, plus a few. Og calls it tormenting myself over events that may never come to pass. Again, these systemic thoughts are dualistic. There's no gray, there's no spectrum, there's no gradation. When an expectation, a concrete condition for happiness, is threatened, a systemic thought will automatically go from everything is perfect to everything is horrible. Those worst-case scenarios. This is called catastrophizing or pessimistic thinking. These over-focused systemic thoughts, which are present in 97% of those actively seeking financial abundance, have no other mathematical choice. To further complicate the dualistic nature of the systemic thought, the very real physiological reactions that are simultaneously occurring at the cellular level in the body serve only as a confirmation that our worst fears are real. These molecule-driven emotions of anxiety and fearfulness and stress can be misinterpreted by our intuition. As a result, we risk the possibility of reading into these feelings much more than is actually happening, and then acting upon this false intuition. If we get caught in this tsunami of emotions, we can turn molehills into a mountain in a moment. You ever been given one of those small pieces of information, you know, a glance, a smile, a frown, a phone call, you know, one of those emails, one of those comments, maybe a little gossip? And from that small piece of information, have you ever written a feature film script about what is really happening, what it really means? If so, have you ever reacted on this false intuitive feeling, believing that it was accurate? How often have you discovered, when you've done this, that it was not as it appeared, not as good, not as serious? Do you ever find yourself apologizing for these overreactions? An unknown author suggests that the word fear is an acronym. It stands for false evidence appearing real. The false evidence is the cortisol and the fear dendrites that are autonomically released when our expectations are challenged. This false evidence heightens our negative or pessimistic thoughts, driving additional releases of these molecules of emotion. This cycle of having an expectation threatened by tangible reality, the release of molecules, and the resultant emotions and feelings of anxiety can seem very real. The basis for these escalating negative thoughts that create this release, the basis is not real. Neuroscientists suggest that this could be one of the most difficult times to be conscious and aware of people and the complexity of situations. The metabolic energy has been robbed from the area of the brain that supports these higher levels of consciousness. Our hippocampus, our memory center, has been locked down or severely blunted. Our body feels tense and anxious. We've been prepared for a war. You ever experienced this level of fear? Have you ever overreacted only to regret it later? Have you ever wounded anyone when this occurs? What price are you paying for this often pervasive and potentially chronic and destructive seed of fantasy? It's 5 p.m. on a Friday, and you get one of those emails or a voice message that causes one of those, you know, lightning bolts of anxiety and fear to wash over you. Do you know the feeling? You know, you want to find out what's going on and you attempt to connect with the person but discover that he or she is left for the weekend and will not be available till 8 a.m. on Monday. I mean, what could it be? Why do they seem so angry or so accusatory? What did I do? Tell me about your weekend. How emotionally available will you be for family and friends? How many negative scenarios will you play out over the next 60 hours? Are you ever tempted to engage in a manhunt in an effort to track down the person and get to the bottom of this challenge? Ever spent a weekend worrying, endlessly playing out every possible scenario? How often are these imagined outcomes negative? How often do worst-case scenarios actually play out in tangible reality? Let's go to 8 a.m. on Monday morning. You call and confront your accuser, only to discover that you misread or misunderstood the message. What happens when everything turns out to be okay? Take a big deep breath and exhale. Feels good, huh? Now, have you ever had a worst-case scenario actually happen? I know I have. It only takes one to confirm the need for this exercise of endlessly preparing for every possible worst-case scenario. However, I've also discovered that this exhausting and energy-depleting process has less to do with preparation and more to do with protection. My worst-case event that actually occurred was painful. How was yours? Did that right cross knock you off your feet? Did it hurt so bad that it left you determined to be prepared to block any blow and from any direction? I found this to be a lot of wasted time. Now, smile for a moment, because tongue-in-cheek, catastrophizing does seem to be effective. I mean, paraphrasing Mark Twain and quoting my dad, "Don't tell me worrying doesn't work. Everything I worry about never happens." Oddly, this exercise of entertaining worst-case scenarios, accompanied by cortisol releases, followed by a deep sense of relief, fueled by epinephrine or dopamine, can also be addicting to a pessimistic thinker. Masochistic, but nonetheless addicting. The process in general can be deadly. Don Kennedy, a family physician and one of our coaches, reports that the majority of health challenges being faced by his geriatric patients can be traced back to a lifetime of obsessive worrying, catastrophizing, and the resultant chronic release of cortisol. Studies support his findings. Dan Goldman, in his seminal work Social Intelligence, reports that chronic doses of cortisol contribute to health challenges such as immune deficiency disease, hypertension, and exacerbation of diabetes. When we are in this war-ready emotional state, we can say and do things we might later regret. It is very difficult to be aware of and be sensitive to the needs of others when we're experiencing these chemical reactions. I can still remember sitting in my office with a good friend and now a coaching client. We were deep in this debrief of his assessment report. It was apparent from the measurements in our conversation that his systemic thoughts engaged regularly in imagined catastrophe. I knew the question to ask. I used to have the same measurement in my assessment. I concluded with this question: what would your life be like if you consciously stopped doing this? Speaking of catastrophizing. His response was revealing. He said, "I would cease to exist." I shared that when I made the conscious decision to change this thought process and stop fantasizing and experiencing the destructive seeds of fantasy, imagined catastrophe, that I found at least 3 extra productive hours in the day. I encouraged him to do likewise. How many hours might you find?